permitted to set up a subcommittee to deal with the matters for the committee. So in this instance, I would, without waste of more time, introduce members of the committee. Thereafter, I will allow you to introduce yourself, and in the 10 minutes, you'd also make a presentation on the topic you would have taken from what has been your request to you. Thereafter, we'll take questions from members, maximum 5 minutes, which includes your responses to the question in the 5 minutes per member. So in that score, please feel welcome this evening. If I may start quickly, we have Honorable Malala on my left. Honorable Malala, followed by Honorable Kubeka next to him. You have Honorable Majozi, Honorable Faku, Honorable Dr. Ndozi, Maneli. We do have another member who's went to leave us, as you would have seen before this, which is Honorable Fanda, but we'll proceed from here. So that's briefly the introduction of the members. I take it that on your side you are ready to have questions. You've done to the intro, as I said, that leads you then to the actual presentation, and then we'll take questions after that. Mr. Mashama.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good evening to members of the Committee on Communication. My name is Boss Mashamani, and I will talk about my credentials and it relates to this topic of a counselor. I studied at UNISA, that's where I got my BA in communication, and then I went to RAU, now it's University of Johannesburg, where I got my honors and master's degree in communication. And then from there, I enrolled with the Buckinghamshire Children's University College in the UK, where I got my MBA. And so I also enrolled with GIBS, which is a subsidiary of the University of Pretoria, where I got the Executive Development Program. And currently I'm with the University of Witwatersrand, pursuing the PhD degree, and so I'm at the stage of data analysis and writing the chapters, the three remaining chapters to conclude the thesis. So in terms of work share, I can say I've worked at the South African Broadcasting Corporation for a period of about 9 years. I was there as the television producer. I know broadcasting in and out. We had people who were running TV 2 and 3 by that time. And from there, I went to the Gender Commission, where I was the head of public education and information. So as I'm sitting here, Chairperson, I'm a gender activist. I advocate for the rights of women and also the empowerment of women. So I worked there for about 9 years. And then I was recruited by ICASA, where I was the general manager for consumer protection, and I was at ICASA at the executive management level for a period of 7 years. I was on a fixed term contract, so my contract ended in 2014, and then so by that time I was very busy with my studies, the PhD, and I felt that I need to step aside a little bit, so that I can focus on finalizing the PhD. And then so from 2014 to date, I've been working on my PhD, and then so I'm now almost finished, so that's why I'm ready to go back to work. And so I can say, Chair, I am very much strong in the area of consumer protection. It was a great passion to me when I was at ICASA. And then I also know how to draft the regulations. I used to lead the team that were drafting consumer protection regulations. And so that is a strength that I'm bringing. And then so for the future, I'm looking forward to be a member of ICASA if I'm successful, so that I can bring some innovations in the authority. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, as I said, can I get to the presentation?
Okay, I have developed the slides on the topic about the analysis of where South Africa is in relation to ICT regulation. So the first slide is about me. I already introduced myself. Okay, the first slide is about myself, and then the second one, which is not so visible, Chair. Is about the presentation outline. I don't have to take you through it for the sake of time. Chair, I'm sorry, the machine is not doing what was supposed to do. It's not.
Laptop.
Here it's still there. It is moving. I can see there. I need to see here. Okay. Let me give the chair there.
We do have the presentation, Chair. Mr. Koff.
I will just talk to this one that I have because you have it. Okay, Chairperson, the first slide, is it working? So, thank you. The first slide, Chair, you see that it starts with the quotation by Yami Diamond, who said good regulation should be conducive to business and to consumer protection. The reason why I use that quote is because we're going to talk about the regulations. And if we have good regulation, then they will be conducive to business. And then we need to know what is a regulator. So a regulator is an agency that is established by government to make sure that it regulates in the public interest, and also it will promote competition and protect the consumers. So we can ask ourselves, why do we regulate? We regulate because we want to promote prices and universal access to services, to avoid market failures, to foster effective competition, to protect the consumers, and to increase access to technology and services. So what will be the goal? The goal at the end of the day is to have effective competition and also to protect the consumers. You will see there's always an emphasis about consumer protection, which is my passion. So we need to know what is public interest. This is about matters that that matters most to everyone in the society. And then, so why I'm talking about public interest is because we say ICASA is regulating in the public interest. So we need to understand why we are talking about public interest. And then, so to achieve public interest, ICASA must perform its functions without fear, favor, or pretty bad. And if it does that, it will hold accountability, which is something that is highly needed in the sector. It also needs to be honest. You can't have a regulator that is not honest, because if it is not honest, you will not be able to trust it. So honesty and trust with it go hand in hand. And there should also be credibility, so that everybody should believe in the product Judge ICASA is delivering at the end of the day. And there must be consistency, meaning that if ICASA is dealing with the licensee A, it must also deal with licensee B in the same manner. Flexibility, it must be flexible, but not be rigid, because others will come with new ideas, and then ICASA need to listen to that and make sure that it takes an appropriate decision. So the next slide has got a quotation by Henry Paulson, who said regulation needs to catch up with innovation. I'm emphasizing innovation here, Chair, because as you can see, the slide there is talking about the four industrial revolutions. So we are now in between the third and the fourth industrial revolution. So when we get to the fourth industrial revolution, must be able to have the regulation that will look at the big data, will look at the cloud computing, will look at the interconnected of the machines, and then also to look at the rolling out of new technology. So there will be new technology that will be in the market, and ICASA must be ready to be able to regulate it. Otherwise, if it is lagging behind, then there will be a problem in the way it is regulating the sector. So there was a question about convergence and regulation versus sector regulation. So in a converged environment, we're talking about telecommunication, we're talking about broadcasting, we're talking about postal services, whereby they are regulated by the same regulator. In this point, is ICASA. So the ICASA is a converged regulator, in other words. And then, so the drivers for convergence are digital technology and liberalization. So liberalization is very important, because if we don't liberalize the market, then there won't be enough entrance into the competition or in the sector. And then we are likely to have high costs that we are also complaining about in ICASA, so in the country, because of high cost. So converged regulation refers to the regulator that regulates communication and telecommunication, broadcasting, postal service, wireless, and also wired communication services. So ICASA is a good example for that. And then, so as we move forward, and then we are moving into a conventional regulator, we will ultimately have the regulator that looks like this slide there, where you have the regulator in between, and then you've got postal, you've got USASA, which is currently a standalone. You've got the BE, which is a standalone. So some of this entities that are not in ICASA will have to come to ICASA and form one regulator that will regulate the sector, as you can see there in the slide. Converged regulation regulates a statutory body that has mandates for regulating information communication and technologies in the public interest. And what are the advantages for a converged regulator? Massive opportunities for development, technology convergence, protect the interests of consumers, control the emergence of cybercrime. There's a lot of cybercrime, which we also have to be proactive about, and it will be a one-stop shop for the industry, meaning that when you go to ICASA, they'll get all the things that you saw there in that big slide. The disadvantage for the converged regulator that it may experience some difficulties in the coordination of numerous subsections. You saw subsections there. There may be a difficulty in managing that. And each subsection may have an agenda and push the agenda, and then that will be also a burden for ICASA too, because they have to listen to the complaints and also make the the decision appropriately. And there also is a risk of one section dominating the other. And then there's also possible for having the friction between the politician and the regulator, which is something that I think we really need to look at ICASA in terms of having the memorandum of understanding between ICASA, the ministry, and also the portfolio committee on committees, so that ICASA know what the committee expects or parliament expects, and ICASA also knows what the ministry expects from it, and then the portfolio committee also expects what know what the ministry expects, and vice versa. So that MOU will then resolve some of the tensions that may be there. And then so politicians may feel usurped by the regulator when we have got a converged regulator. But this is something that can be managed. A single sector regulator is a regulator that is only regulating one sector, for example, telecommunication. So you have only one regulator that is only responsible for telecommunication. And what are the advantages for that? The approach allows the regulator to concentrate its resources on one sector and not on main sectors, like what you saw there. And it eliminates the possibility of losing the resources from one sector to another. For example, if ICASA is self-funded, of course, by the approval from Parliament, then it will be using the resources that will get from licenses from the licensee, Vodacom, for example, MTN, broadcasters, and so on. So you may find that there's also a complaint by other sectors that ICASA is using our money to regulate, and then we are not getting better regulation and so on. So it will be strong in engineering, because you only have people that are there focusing on telecom, and then you also recruit the engineers, and then you'll have a strong team that is working in that sector. The disadvantage is that the single regulator is likely to be subject to greater scrutiny by the regulated entities, which are the licensees, and it will be watched closely by the licensee about how it is regulating, and it also runs the risk of being forced constantly to justify its existence, because it is a single sector, so it can always be asked, why are you existing? Why we can't do self-regulation, regulate ourselves? The dimension of regulatory effectiveness. So effective regulator is a regulator that strengthens the public investor confidence. It ensures that the market players are treated equally, and it increases stability and objectivity in regulatory processes. So stability and objectivity is very much important, because if the licensee thinks that the ICASA is subjective, then there will be a problem, and that will waste more time, because we don't have time. We really have to move forward, more especially when we are moving towards the fourth industrial revolution change. Independence is very critical for effective regulator. We hear that ICASA is an independent regulator, and that is provided for by Section 192 of the Constitution. And then it's an independent regulator together with the Chapter 9 institutions, which are independent, special bodies that are there to support democracy. So ICASA also is regulating there in the public interest to support democracy. And what are the dimensions of effective regulator? Structural independence, financial independence, and functionality. And then when we go to structural independence, Chair, we're talking about the establishment of the regulator, independent regulator, as required by the WTO. And then the structural independence is an important element for effective regulation. So in other words, when we have a clearly defined structure of the regulator, we will always ensure that there's independence there. The National Assembly will know what ICASA is doing, the minister will know what ICASA is doing, as per that MOU that I mentioned earlier on that. And so the mandate of the regulator should be to promote competition and protect consumers. So this is very important. We are regulating that for all the South Africans. All South Africans are consumers, and then we need to make sure that we protect them, to make sure that they don't have the drop calls, to make sure that they have a quality of service, to make sure that the prices are affordable, not high prices. So that is why we regulate. And a bound pressure will make the regulator lack independence. If it is bound pressure from the external stakeholder, then it will lack independence because people say, you see, that is, a body is controlling ICASA, and then ICASA is not independent. Financial independence, this is about finance, Chair. I will just take you through this slide, not go bullet by bullet. Financial independence relates to the way the regulator is funded. How you fund the regulator determines the way it is going to be a strong regulator. Right now, ICASA is funded by the appropriation from Parliament, and then the money goes to National Treasury, and then managed by the Department of Communications, and then so every month the chunk must be given to ICASA, and then if it's delayed, then ICASA is also going to delay in paying its staff, paying the services and the product and so on. So this is about financial independence. And then, so if the regulator is to be financial independent, I personally, I would suggest that it must be self-funded with the approval from the National Assembly, because it accounts to the National Assembly. Not to be self-funded and determine the way it is going to work. It is state entity. The state have to have a say on it. So that is why I say, in terms of financial independence, I would just propose that it's self-funding from the license fees, spectrum licenses, the individual licenses, the class licenses, and then Parliament, at the end of the day, the one that appropriate and approve the budget. So it's about now about functionality, the way the is working. Functionality is a success to the regulator is continuing delivering of wealth functions and responsibilities. Well-defined functions and responsibilities are very critical, because if I don't know what I'm doing in ICASA, there will be a role conflict. And then where there's role conflict is also going to be set attention. And for us to eliminate tension, we must make sure that we know what is the chairperson doing, what are the councillors doing, what is the CEO doing, what are the staff doing, and how do they link to each other, how do they synchronize to each other. Otherwise, if we don't have that, there will be chaos. And the other thing is that we also need to have something that I will call engagement policy between the council and the staff. That policy will be critical. I don't know if the person will have it. That policy will make sure that we know how does the councillors engage with staff. Because in many places, we find that staff have easy communication to councillors, and then at the end of the day, you find that there are confidential things that are said to staff which are not supposed to be said. And then when you go to negotiations, for example, I was a chief negotiator for ICASA during the increase of the salaries. You find that when we get there, they already know that I have been given the mandate to say, we must only allow 7% or 8%. And then whether that's true, I have been given that by the CEO and then so if we have that engagement of staff and the councillors, we will eliminate that, because it will clearly define that, and then that will be governed by the code of conduct, which is the the HR policies that are there to govern the way staff have to interact with one another in the authority. So that is about functionality, Chair. So I think I have said everything about transmitter. I'll just jump this slide. Okay. So the regulatory structure, we need to know that to whom does the regulatory report, and account to the minister and parliament. But the account to, I can say they report to the minister and account to parliament, because at the end of the day, the minister is the one that tabled the annual performance plan and the budget of ICASA to parliament. And how is the regulator financed? So it's appropriation from the from parliament administered by the DOC, and new account councillors and chairpersons. This process that we are undergoing, the National Assembly, and then at the end of the day, after the National Assembly approved who is going to be appointed, they give the list to the minister, and the minister write appointment letter. The term there is fixed term. Chairperson is 5 years, councillors 4 years, and then they can also go for the second term, the last 5 years for the chair, and the last 4 years for the councillors. And then the only decision body that can overturn the council decision is the court of law. And then there's no other body that can do the decision. Self-regulations is about regulating yourself. We give the industry the authority to self-regulate. And co-regulation is where the industry and the regulator combine and they co-regulate. So that is what co-regulation is all about. The advantages. Okay. Thank you, Chair.
For that. So I tried to recover the time we've lost also on the machine. 10 minutes. Honourable members, I think that's the gist of the presentation because of the presentation before. I will now take questions to engage the presentation. Honourable Kubede.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also greet the Dade Vijan Maswangana to say, and also thank you for the presentation. I can hear that it's so informative. Tried to cover everything, but I've got just only two questions, Chair. To Dade Maswangana, on the side of the data market inquiry, I would like just to know what are the biggest disagreements or differences in approach between ICASA and the Competition Commission on data price regulation. How can they be reconciled? The second question, I would like just to know to Ndate Maswangana to say he is aware about the issue of the convergence of the entities with ICASA. Do you think is it fruitful for ICASA on the issue of converging? If you believe that is gonna work, can you just explain a little bit to say how? On the side of the budget, I can hear that you are saying indeed, the side of the financial, they need to have actually be funded in order that they should be also on the side of the independency, in order that they must run all their staff on the side of the ICASA. Are you confident enough to say they can manage to run their own finances there at the ICASA? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The disagreement that the honourable member said between ICASA and the Competition Commission can easily be resolved because both are regulators and they regulate for all the South Africans. And so when I read the report by the Competition Commission, I saw a lot of recommendations that are making more sense. The recommendation that ICASA needs to study and make the regulations about it. And the good thing that I saw is that ICASA and the Competition Commission have signed a memorandum of understanding, meaning that they are supposed to work together. They can work together. So what needs to happen is that at the political level, the Minister of Communication and the Minister of Trade and Industry really need to come together and discuss how these two regulators can synergize and work together, because they don't have to work in silos. So the work that is there, the recommendations that are there, for me are very, very critical. And if I can be appointed, I think I will advocate and persuade my fellow councillors to make sure that we implement them. They are very good. In terms of convergence, is it fruitful that ICASA can be a converged regulator? We need to move with the times, honourable member, because if we look at areas which are advanced, like the UK, like Denmark, like Finland, like South Korea, their regulators are converged, and they are working very, very, very well. And I think, again, if I can be appointed, I'll advocate that we have a working relationship with the regulators, because there's a lot to learn from them, and also as we learn from them, we'll be able to make sure that we cut down the cost. Can ICASA manage these finances? ICASA is subjected to the Public Finance Management Act, and there are sections in the PFMA that make sure that if you don't manage the public funds appropriately, you are likely to go to jail. And there's also the performance management system, which I saw in the Act, which I think it needs to be fast-tracked. And then when we have this, we'll also have the key performance areas for the chairperson, the councillors, the CEO, and the staff about how the finances are utilized in line with the annual performance plan. So if I have budgeted 100 rand for addressing the data, the higher cost of data, I would have to use the 100 rand. I can't use more than that, because if I use more than that, it will be a wasteful expenditure or unauthorized expenditure. So all those forms of expenditure that are there in the PFMA have to be looked into, and then I think I'll advocate that if I can be in ICASA.
So are you advising us also to say we can go to those countries that you have counting on it, just to go and benchmark in order that you can be successful here?
Yes, honourable member, I am making a strong recommendation that you, as the Portfolio Committee on Communication, also visit those countries, so that if it happens that ICASA can go there and they come and account to you here in Parliament, we'll have a clear understanding of what you saw there. It will not just be a hearsay and say, no, ICASA is here and saying this, but we don't know about it. But you will know about it, and then you will also be able to foster relationship with your fellow politicians there, who are also overseeing this ICT sector.
Thank you, Chair. I must say that I am very much impressed with the presentation, because you come up with issues but also come up with solutions. I'm much impressed about the issue of performance that you are coming up with. Perhaps you would have a bit of background as a committee when it comes to performance. So some of the things that you are coming up with, I think somehow you are assisting us. And in terms of functionality, what is the role of each and every person? So I think that is important as well. My questions will be, out there, there's criticism that the regulator is weak, there's no capacity. What is your view? My second question will be, there are instances where the overlap the duplication of roles with the different entities. What is your view? And my last question will be, what is your understanding of the gazetted policy on high demand spectrum released by the minister? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Member. In terms of criticism about ICASA, that it doesn't have capacity, I do agree with that, Chair, because the ICT sector has been evolving throughout the years. Right now, the budget, the total budget for in the ICT sector is about 229 billion rands. And then in the previous year, it was less than that, meaning that every year, there's always an increase in the revenue that they generate. And when there's an increase in revenue that the sector is generating, it means ICASA should also have an increase in the human resources that are there to regulate the sector, because otherwise, if you have a weight of about 10 kilograms this side, 20 kilograms this side, and we have a weight of about 3 kilograms this side, so there won't be balance. So there's a need for balance between the regulator's resources and also the sector that it is regulating. So next year, if we can check, we'll find that the industry has generated more revenue, but you find that in ICASA, you still have the same number of staff. And then we are going to the fourth industrial revolution. And as we are going there, Chair, there will be new developments. There will be new innovation, more especially in terms of the new technology that will come into place. And then technology that is there, which is meant for communication, need to be regulated. And you need to have the specialists who know how to regulate these new technologies. And if you don't have them, then you will find a situation whereby people out there will say ICASA is a toothless regulator. And if you want to avoid that, you need to make sure that if you have 5 kilograms this side of the ICT, you also need to have 5 kilograms this side to offer the regulator. Not necessarily in terms of weight, but I'm just explaining that the staff also need to increase. And the other thing that I also want to emphasize and mention is that throughout the years, more especially when I was at ICASA, we used to lose a lot of expert staff to the industry. So we will train the staff to be well equipped, and then because we are not paying the market-related salary, which they can get from the industry will push them, and then we lose them. So, in other words, I need to say that for us to maintain the knowledge and the expertise what we have, we need to benchmark with the market and see how much staff is paid so that they cannot leave ICASA, and then we keep on training so ICASA become a training college for the industry. We need to avoid that, because as we lose staff, the government, public are losing funds, because we have trained these people through the public funds, and then they leave, and then we have lost. Another question was the role clarity between ICASA and other regulators. There's a need for to have a regulator in Daba, in my view, whereby the regulators come together and they outline what each of them are doing. And then so that we can see where are duplications. And where are duplications, the leadership, in this case, councillors and the CEO, if I'm appointed, I'll be one of the people that will be participating in that process, so that we look at what are the duplicates, and then agree as the regulators that let's take this and it must be yours. Let's take this and it must be yours. And we agree. And once we agree, we also need to go back to our principals and then report about our agreement. And the principal will probably come to Parliament and report about the outcome of that endeavor. And then if all the role players, Parliament, the Ministry, and the regulators agree, then we'll have a MOU amongst all the regulators, and then we agree that we are going to do this, we are going to share information about this, and so on and so on. The gazetting of the high demand spectrum. This is something that South Africa have been waiting for. The high demand spectrum is your 700 megahertz, your 800 megahertz, your 2.3 gigahertz, your 2.6 gigahertz, and your 3.5 gigahertz. So these are the spectrum that are highly in demand by the operators. So we hear that if they want to bring down the cost, they need to have the spectrum. So fortunately, the Gazette made provision for the spectrum auction, which will be taking place very soon. And then that auction will be the one that will make sure that whoever is bidding high will be given the frequency spectrum, and then of course at a cost, and of course at a fee that will have to be paid, I think, yearly. And so right now the reserve fee has not been decided by the authority, and so we are all looking forward to that. For the lots that have been created within the spectrum that I've mentioned, and see how that is going to be done. So the other good thing is that there's also provision for the wireless open access network, the WAN, that is there, which is sort of a wholesale provider, whereby the entrant in the market will go and get access to provide the services through that one operator. And then as we have many entrants there in the market, I guess the cost will also be lower. So we are looking anxiously for that process of auctioning, but it really needs to be done very cautiously. And I will advise ICASA to make sure that they liaise with the Ofcom. They have done the auction. Ofcom is the regulator in the UK. FCC, they have done that, the regulator in the United States of America. And Germany also did that. So I think if they can liaise with these regulators and find out how did they auction that, because they are ahead of us in terms of auctioning, then they will be able to come with a new, with a good product. The thing that have to be looked into is pollution. There's a great likelihood of having pollution when the spectrum is auctioned, whereby the dominant companies in the market can agree that we are going to bid like this, and we must not exceed that. So that's why I say we really need to get highly professional advice from these regulators that I've mentioned before they can embark on the spectrum auction.
Honorable Dr. Ndlozi.
Excuse me. So you were a
a boundary administrator, I've asked the question.
Honorable member, I was not a Bantu administrator. In my life, I was
working. You have written here Administration Board, Northern Transvaal. I don't have time. Chap, you see, please, when he drinks water, stop the clock. What is this? What is if you are not a Bantu administrator in the past, what is to be a board member of the Administration Board of Northern Transvaal? What were you doing there?
I was working there as a sports and recreation officer. So I was working with communities. Was developing our communities in the area of sports and also in the area of...
You are employed by the apartheid government?
Well, everybody who has been working during...
My man, I beg of you, I'm sorry. Yes or no?
Well, that government by that time was apartheid government, yes.
Okay, when was this?
It was in 1977 up to 1980.
So, 77 to 83, you were working for the apartheid government.
Agreed? I was working for the entity that was established by them.
What does that make of you? Your peers were in the struggle. People of high conscience. People of high calling. You want to be a counselor of a Chapter 9 institution, and in the best days of your youth, Unosa Zavalazi, you were developing sports in Lebowa. What does that make of you? Why must I put a person like that in an institution like this?
Honorable Ndlovu, there's this thing of fighting the system from within. And for me and others who have been working in that system that is hated by everybody, we also had our way of influencing these young people that we have been training to politicize them. Because we were working with them alone, we were working with them in their own languages, and then we were also making sure that they understand what the struggle is. The struggle is not to say you have been running there and then people saw you burning houses and whatever. The struggle can also be in terms of...
So the liberation movement...
Influencing the...
That's fact. The liberation movement in the 80s said we must render apartheid ungovernable. And there were two successive states of emergency, one of which lasted until Dandeni. How were you transforming the system from within, because the call was that it must be rendered dysfunctional?
The dysfunctionality that you are talking about was not only in what used to be called South. I remember when I was still at school, at Sudwani, there used to be this term of saying these people are coming from the South, and these people are coming from the North. And we who are from the North, we're also engaging our struggle. There's no way in which anyone can say the North did not...
I'm being specific to you. People were being arrested, were losing their lives for taking a position against an unjust system. The collective strategy in those years was to make these institutions, like the one that paid you, employed you, dysfunctional. So how did you make the Administration Board of Northern Transvaal dysfunctional?
give me an example of how you, in your right conscience, challenge the apartheid system in its worst years of repression to demonstrate that you've got the fires of democracy burning in you to serve in an institution that is about protecting this democracy. What did you do?
In the area where I was working, I also used to challenge the white leaders that I was reporting to. And those white leaders will from time to time say that this is not Soweto. Don't do what Soweto is doing. Because we used to challenge them. When they come with something, we will debate with them, we'll challenge them. And then if we don't agree, we'll also have to go to the next level to say we don't agree about this and then we're not going to do it.
Because so you were debating with the system?
Because we do it within the society and the society is not going to.
You were debating with the system. So my perception on the basis of this, and this will be my final line of questioning on this one before I go to the technicalities. That's what your history says. What is your reaction to that?
No, not my soul. So I have done my part in my area, which is the Northern Transvaal by that time. And so we have also done our part at the school during the student uprisings. We also created the system that was there for education and governable where we were there. And I think people who come from Sudan can always attest to that we at that school we have struggled a lot and then we have changed the system that was there.
I don't think people who didn't challenge apartheid of your generation, I think they should indeed serve South Africa. But they're asking a much higher calling here. You have to be a man of serious conscience. I'm struggling. I really am. You have to be leadership. But that's fine. Maybe my colleagues will convince me. Last question relates to the technicalities of the industry. What is the specific fourth industrial revolution challenges in a developing economy like South Africa in the telecommunications sector?
The challenges that we foresee in the fourth industrial revolution is that we are not ready for that revolution, because it is talking about big data which need to be managed and analyzed. We're talking about new digital technologies which we still have to learn about that and also learn how to regulate that as a regulator. And then we're also talking about things like cloud computing, which is something that many people still grapple with, and then we need to learn about it. So there's a lot of learning that we have to do in preparation for the full-blown fourth industrial revolution. Because
so
we
big
are
data is fourth industrial revolution, and cloud computing
is part of that.
Can I do my last question, Chair? It's the final one, I promise.
I'm done. Okay.
Thank you very much.
After that response, Honorable
Mulanda. Thanks, Jay. Mulanda Mashwangwa. Nani kereke Mashwangwa? Mashwangwa. Pause. Most of you who presented today spoke about one common issue of that this sector has been privatized, liberalized, and regulated. But none of you is talking about the main contradiction of having a private company that is competitive, that can easily be regulated. Because a private company's main motive is obviously is profit. They can compete amongst themselves, that is correct. But how do you regulate? Because ultimately, the private companies will ultimately conglomerate into a monopoly, like what we see here in South Africa, the domination of few companies. Ultimately, it will be one. I don't know when, but in the next 10 years, it will be having one. So are you going to have a regulator for, say, one company in telecoms, one company, and so on? So that's the contradiction that we need to manage, because we are struggling to say what that Section 192 of the Constitution mean. Does it mean ICASA is a Chapter 9 institution? Only the broadcasting element. If you support conversion, what do you do with this Chapter 9 section of the broadcasting? Do you still put it under all these other entities that are not necessarily in Chapter 9? And what would be the objective of doing that? If you were in ICASA, because you have already recommended your views that you want to converge, the whole world is doing that. But I wanted to know that there's a section that is exclusive that relates to the Constitution. So are you recommending that we amend the Constitution on that section alone? The other area that you raised was that conversions have got some weaknesses of focusing on one area as opposed to other. In the current situation, the current ICASA situation, what would you say is dominant now in your view? Is it telecoms? Is it broadcasting? And why do you say that? And how do you think we can remedy that if that is inexistent? The last question is that there is this language that we use, if you can clarify, you said there's public investor confidence. You know, this language is very interesting. I thought the Honorable Nkosi, an astute socialist, will talk to this. Public investor confidence. If you can just extrapolate. Because the investor, it's something else. The public is something else. The confidence of both, how does it relate to the current situation? If somebody wants to invest in South Africa, is that the public investor confidence? Maybe that's the telecom language. You will explain it better. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. The first one is about whether the Constitution needs to be amended to address the issues that we've raised. So, no, there's no need for amending the Constitution because in Section 192 of the Constitution, it provides for the public broadcaster that is independent. So hence it is falling under Chapter 9. That 192 is falling under Chapter 9 of the Constitution. So there's no need for doing that because as you saw in my slide, the World Trade Organization have requested countries to establish regulators that are independent. And if you are going to establish
regulators that are independent, then they must be in law. And the law now, in this case, is the Constitution. So there's no need for amending the Constitution and changing that section. And in terms of convergence, weaknesses, and then you say we do have the dominant players in the telecom. Yes, we do have the dominant players in the telecom, more than in broadcasting and also in the poster. We also have a little bit in broadcasting in the form of multi-choice. Multi-choice is a dominant operator there in the broadcasting, because it has been there for many years. It has entrenched itself. It has well established, and there's a need for new entrants to come into the space of pay television. I know that ICASA have identified five new entrants, and one is Sabina, which has been given the what we can say is the test license to test if it can be able to broadcast. And then, if I'm not wrong, it has been given up to 2020 this year to make sure that it starts broadcasting. So the other four have not yet showed their strength to ICASA, so they have not been asked to test the broadcast. So there's a need for them to be encouraged that they must enter the market, because if they don't enter the market, then the monopoly of broadcasting by multi-choice will always be there, and it can only be neutralized, so to say, if we have new entrants. And then, so that is what needs to happen. That's the remedy that I am suggesting. Public investor confidence. When we talk about the public, we're talking about government. And so government has invested in many areas in the country. And so that I can say is a public investor. And then so the question is, does the public have confidence in that? Some don't have, some do have, because there are services that are provided by the government through the infrastructure that it has established. And then so it cannot be 100% correct, so it will take time to be strong. And then of course with the commitment of the people that are working in the public sector, who are civil servants, if they are committed to make sure that the investor that the government have put there in place and do provide services, then we will are likely to have public investor confidence. So the public will have confidence in the investment that the public service has brought out into them.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, Mr. Shawani. I hope I'm pronouncing Mashawani.
Yes.
Firstly, let me maybe appreciate the informative presentation that you presented, and also the educative responses that you have given. I have only one question. What is the difference between ICASA and FPB? And in your own view, what do you think of the possible merger between the two? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member of Parliament. There's a fine or thin line between ICASA and the film and public and the Film and Publications Board. The Film and Publications Board regulate content, and then so this content will be in the form of films, videos, And then the content from the internet, I know that they are regulating that content, particularly that is having pornography, child pornography. And so they are dealing with what I can say is audio-visual. Audio is the sound, visual is what we see. So ICASA is also regulating the ICT sector. And then in the ICT sector, we've got audio in the form of sound broadcast in the radios, and then we have got visuals in the form of television broadcast, which have sound and audio combined together. So if we really want to strengthen the regulatory rules of these two entities, I will advocate that they match because they perform almost one and the same function, because FPB is dealing with the issues that ICASA is also dealing with, which is sound and visual. So ICASA can combine with the FPB and they become one regulator that will form one-stop shop. If you want to complain about the child pornography, you just go to that entity, which is ICASA. You complain. If you want to complain about telecom or high cost of data, you go to that. So in other words, it's one stop shop where you can have everything addressed for you.
No, thanks, Mr. Shangwan. I think for me, my questions have been covered. I would not ask further questions except to give you an opportunity to say your last points that you want to bring to the committee.
Chair, Naginili Kuchie, one fella. I only have one question. Kuchiaga Gore. Is there going to be any opportunity whereby yourselves as the interim authority is going to inform us about whether we have made it or we didn't make it? I think it would be very good and very fair if one get that, so that you can also do the chapter if you do not make it. That's my only question.
My challenge, Chairperson, is to put me like a speed in my room, which I got score.
If I got score, or Baba will work on the room.
So, but you did hear. I take it that I think of your concern to you is how to close the chat. And I think what would then happen is that the administrative side, which has also been interacting with yourselves, will also be doing the same once they have NOE indicated. But more importantly, because as you would know, this process also involves the National Assembly and the Minister, and that information also gets to be public. So in that scope, you would be informed in both ways. Thank you.
Chairperson, the Malobo Parliamente, the level of Minari.
Ke re tsara ka mogalo le re shumele le shumele tsha ya le bo. Ke e phala mro.